This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. Viagra for Diddy. Cocaine, ecstasy, horse trank, Plan B, birth control.
Baby oil, Astroglide, and condoms.
Percocet, weight loss pills, sperm count pills. It was just, he carried a pharmacy with him.
Straight out to the courthouse, standing by, legal correspondent Lauren Conlon, investigative reporter and star of Pop Crime TV. Lauren, thank you for being with us. What happened in court today?
We saw Kid Cudi testify, and it was fairly quick. It took a portion of the morning, and during opening statements, the prosecutors gave us a little bit of a taste about this break-in that involved Diddy, an assistant, and one of his associates. Well, when Kid Cudi, a.k.a. Scott Mescudi, took the stand, it turns out that Diddy was the one that broke into his house, kidnapped one of his employees, Capricorn Clark, with an associate, went over there looking for Cassie. And this was after Sean Combs found out about this relationship that was going on between Kid Cudi and Cassie. And look, Kid Cudi said he was a little confused. Cassie had told him that she and Sean Combs were broken up. You know, they were on again, off again. So when he got this call from Cassie, where she was very, very upset and alarmed, this was in 2011, he went to pick her up. He took her to a hotel. And it turns out she gave Sean Combs Kid Cudi's address. This came out. That was a little confusing. So Kid Cudi finds out that Sean Combs is at his house because Capricorn Clark, the assistant, calls him and Cassie from the driveway in the car, very scared, and says, look, Combs is in the house. Now, Kid Cudi gets very upset. He says he's going over there. So he drives over there and he says that he calls Sean Combs and he says, hey, mother effer, why are you in my house? And Diddy says something like, I just want to talk. Now, when he gets to the house, Diddy's no longer there. He notices that, you know, nothing is broken, nothing is out of place, but he did have some Christmas presents for his family in Chanel boxes. Those were unwrapped on the kitchen table, and his dog was locked in a bathroom. He also noted that the surveillance cameras outside his house appeared to be pointed down. Now, after this, you know, he leaves. He sees that he's getting text messages from Combs, and he thinks to himself, okay, I don't really know if I want to get involved here because who knows if he has weapons, whatever. So he actually calls the police and files a police report. Now, we've discussed this. It's December of 2011. Kid Cudi and Cassie go to Cassie's family home in Connecticut for the holidays. Sean Combs still is texting Kid Cudi, you know, trying to talk to him, trying to you know, get a meeting with him. And Cudi ignores him. And then Cassie ends up breaking up with him on his trip. He returns back to L.A. And a month later, it's January 2012. He is about 45 minutes away from his house, Kid Cudi. And his dog babysitter calls him and says, your car is on fire in the driveway. A Molotov cocktail has somehow been thrown in the car. We then see pictures of the car. The roof is broken in or sunken in with a hole in it. The inside is all charred. He calls the police, files a police report. And then a few days later, he says, okay, you know, that's it. I'm contacting Combs and we're going to work this out. So they have a meeting at the LA Soho House. He describes D-Rock, the security guard that we've heard about multiple times, ushering him into this room. And this got a lot of laughs, Nancy. He described Combs as facing this big window in the room with his back towards him, his hands behind his back. And he actually said he looked like a Marvel supervillain. So he said also that Diddy's demeanor was so calm that it was almost bizarre. He offered him water twice, you know, and they seemed to work it out. And then at the end of the conversation, and Cassie joined later, by the way, and at the end of the conversation, Cudi says they shook hands. And while their hands were clasped, he said, well, what about my car? And Diddy basically was like, I don't know anything about your car. And they let their hands go. And then, you know, they kind of walked out. And that was that. And he said he hadn't seen him until a few years later. He saw him again at the Soho House. And this time, Diddy was with his two daughters. And he apologized to Kid Cudi and said, look, I'm sorry for everything that happened, anything that went on between us. But Nancy, when Brian Steele got up to do the cross-examination, he pointed out a couple things. as that's his job. But he pointed out that during the break-in, Kid Cudi's door, there was no damage to it. The door was wide open and anybody could have walked in. He also pointed out that there were DNA or fingerprints pulled from the investigation into the car blow up. And those that DNA was actually, it belonged to a female.
Okay, let me understand something. So 1 month later, after the whole Cassie Ventura relationship blows up, 1 month later, Kid Cudi's car is bombed with a Molotov. So isn't it true that Sean Combs had discussed blowing up his car?
Yes, Cassie. This is through Cassie. She said that this was discussed and he was going to do it when one of Kid Cudi's friends were present. And, you know, I believe someone else did see that in the driveway. I have to go back to my notes, but I believe after the fact, it wasn't just the dog sitter. Someone else saw it. But I'll go back and check. But it definitely, the dog sitter, she took pictures right away.
Okay, so how did Kid Cudi discover that Sean Combs was sitting in his place?
Capricorn Clark, I guess she was an assistant of Diddy's, but she also was friends with Cassie and then became friends with Kid Cudi. She called from the driveway in the car. She stayed in the car while Diddy and an associate went in, and Kid Cudi had her on speakerphone so Cassie could hear as well. And he described her as being scared and upset.
Okay, so Diddy's assistant calls Kid Cudi and says, Combs is in your place. All right. And the cross-examination on that was there were no fingerprints?
Well, the cross-examination was that, look, nothing was destroyed. Nothing was broken. Your door was wide open, so there was no forced entry. And, you know, the cross-examination by Brian Steele, I couldn't actually believe what he got Kid Cudi to say. He actually got him to say that both he and Sean Combs were, quote, played by Cassie. I mean, it was, I guess
oh,
there
wow.
was this.
So it's the victim's fault again. Okay, so now we have two guys that were dating Cassie, to put it euphemistically. And now, we got played by her. Forget the split lip and the plastic surgery on the eye and the beatings. They got played. That's just so predictable. It's her fault. I forgot that. Garagos needs to remind me of that again. So, you know what? Lauren Conlon, when I left for the studio early this morning, I left my back door open so the dog could go in and out. But I certainly don't expect Sean Combs to come plop himself down and start opening presents and basically call and threaten me saying, I'm in your house. I'm in your house, woman. Yeah. So I don't care if the door was open, which of course it was not. None of that means anything when it comes to a burglary. I want to get back to the fact. Wow. What? Is Sean Combs now clairvoyant? Because he brags, I'm going to blow up Cudi's car. I'm going to blow it up. And then 1 month later, bam. So Sean Combs is what? Clairvoyant?
Listen, I know the job of defense attorneys, and I have to say, we all just, as layman's out there, we knew what was going on, most of us. We pay attention to pop culture. We kind of knew about this, but I felt like what Brian Steele was able to get out of Kid Cudi in terms of, you know, not having the exact proof that Diddy did this, you know, we had everything else. We had everything within the circumstance that he did this. And Brian Steele, again, you know, he did his job. He got Kid Cudi to say that he was in love with Cassie. And he got him to say that he did feel almost, quote unquote, played, which, yes, was victim blaming. Absolutely. But the fact that he got him to say that, I felt like it elicited a few little mini gasps in the courtroom.
Okay, wait. So I'm confused here. I hear what you're saying, but I don't see the probative value of getting Kid Cudi to say he loved Cassie. Okay, I don't think that was very hard to do. He obviously loved Cassie. So I don't see that as a win-win situation. In fact, that's why Combs wanted to blow up his car, because he loved Cassie, Kid Cudi loved Cassie, and Cassie had feelings to Kid Cudi. I think that helps the state. So what's the big score? I'm sorry, I'm not getting it. And I know Steele. He's a great lawyer. I know him and his wife. So explain to me, what's the big win, Lauren Conlon?
Well, I would say if I had to pick a defense win there, it would be one for him to agree multiple times that he felt like Cassie kind of pulled the wool over his eyes because she wasn't totally honest with him about her relationship with Combs. That would be one.
Do you think maybe it's because she didn't want another, no real nice way to say this, ass whipping? Did you think maybe that's
why? Of course. Oh, my gosh. Of course. Listen, I am not arguing that. I'm just trying to pick out what I feel like could be considered a defense win here. So that was one.
Okay, I agree. I hear you.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other one was him saying, well, you know, there was DNA pulled, you know, from the scene of your car, the Molotov cocktail. Did the police ever tell you that this came from a female? And Kid Cudi said, no, they never shared that with me. So it was kind of silent for a minute. And also, Brian Steele, I mean, he got up there and he was complimenting Scott Mescudi, Kid Cudi. He was kind of making him smile and embarrassing him a little bit. And at one point, there was a sidebar.
Oh, I can see that.
And yeah, when they came back from the sidebar, Kid Cudi even goes, oh, Mr. Steele, I just want to clarify something for you. And the judge is like, no, you can't talk. And it was this whole moment because, you know, they all seemed to have
You know
this
what? Steele has that ability. I always called it my Andy of Mayberry cross-exam, where I want something out of the witness, but I don't want to tear them to shreds. Okay, so I think that's what Steele was using right there, and he's very effective at that. But I got another question. So Sean Combs's fingerprints and DNA were not on the car that was blown up with the Molotov 1 month after Diddy threatened to blow it up. Okay, sorry, not impressed. I mean, do you really think Sean Combs, Diddy, was going to run down to the Citgo or the Valero and pump his own gas into a container and make his own Molotov? I mean, he didn't even clean up his own disgusting hotel rooms that were covered with a baby oil slick. He made somebody else do it. So, of course, his DNA isn't there.
Well, and we heard that from George Kaplan, actually, yesterday during his testimony, that he had to clean up baby oil off the table, off the floor, whatever. But I have a feeling, Nancy, that we are going to hear possibly from the person who had to do this for him. Because, I mean, at this point, I guess it's like you have all the circumstances pointing to Diddy being responsible for this. We just don't have a paper trail. And who knows if that's going to matter in the end. Again, we're on the second week here, so we've got a lot to get through. But I'm very curious if we're going to see, you know, these breadcrumbs leading to someone in his enterprise who was responsible for this by his directive.
Lauren Conlon, also, when you don't know a horse, look at his track record. If you don't know what happened in this case, look what happened leading up to it. Sean Combs makes his cleanup crew clean up his disgusting freak off and pay the damages for the hotel. He makes his underlings, bodyguard, chase down Cassie Ventura and physically drag. Oh, there you go. You need some deep cleaning now, man. Made his bodyguard go chase down Cassie and drag her physically back to him. He made his assistant go and try to make him get a false police report when Sean Combs attacked his own female chef. I mean, it's always making some other person do your dirty work. And Sean Combs never gets his own hands dirty. I guarantee you, he's not the one that threw that Molotov. He had somebody else do it. And that somebody else could very well come into the courtroom and take the fifth and tell all. Do you think that's going to happen, Lauren Conlon?
Well, I don't know if you were aware, but George Kaplan actually was set to take the fifth, or so we thought, the last couple of days. We had heard this discussed in the courtroom, and then he got immunity. And I believe this was for him testifying about buying drugs for Sean Combs. And then we knew that David James also got a proffer and got immunity. So I am not surprised here. I feel like there definitely will be more. However, I do want to point this out, and I know you're not going to like this, Nancy, but both of the assistants, David James and George Kaplan, they showed Diddy respect. They gave him a head nod. I mean, George Kaplan this morning, before he got off the stand, he actually talked about how, you know, Diddy instilled certain work ethics in him that he still uses today. So I was a little confused about
you
some of the,
you know, care? You think
no,
I care who
I
nodded at Diddy? They're probably afraid their car is going to get bombed as soon as they drive away from the courthouse. That means nothing to me. All that matters to me is a true verdict. And has the state proven the offenses in the indictment. There can be all the head nodding you want, Lauren Conlon. Don't care. Diddy raging over last week's Tootsie Roll reveal. His what?
He's a complete control freak. And in a sick, perverse way, I think he's secretly enjoying that we're all talking about Diddy.
People keep asking the wrong questions about Cassie Ventura and Sean Combs, a.k.a. Diddy's other sex trafficking victims. Everybody says, why did she stay? Instead of, why did he beat her? Why did he continue to make her participate in freak-offs over her objections? But now we see a very, very successful musical artist thrown in the mix and corroborating what we know to be true according to the state. It's Kid Cudi. Who is Kid Cudi?
Scott Mascuti, a.k.a. Kid Cudi, is signed to Kanye West's label, Good Music, in late 2008 after his song Day and Night gains popularity on MySpace. Cudi's debut album, Man on the Moon, The End of the Day, shoots the rapper to fame, going quadruple platinum with additional singles Make Her Say and Pursuit of Happiness. Mascuti also dabbles in film and television, guest starring in several projects, performing music and others, and starring in a few feature films, Need for Speed and Bill and Ted Face the Music.
Straight out to renowned psychoanalyst joining us out of L.A. is Dr. Bethany Marshall. She's the author of Deal Breakers. You can see her now on Peacock. And she's at drbethanymarshall.com. Dr. Bethany, I'm sure I don't have to jog your memory with this, but we've all seen the videos of room cleaners. I'm going to circle back to the disgusting day after freak-off that Diddy paid to have cleaned up. My point is, he always has somebody else do his dirty work. So I just heard Lauren Conlon, still there, standing by at the courthouse, say, wow, Brian Steele, who's a very good lawyer, I think, really got a lot out of Kid Cudi on cross, that there was no fingerprint left behind by Sean Combs or Sean Combs' DNA. Really? It's just like Sean Combs going to go fill up at Valero and trot over there and make a Molotov and a Coke bottle and throw it himself. Yeah, that's not going to happen. He has his minions do everything. And I've got example after example after example. So if he can make a grown man throw a Molotov, right? Make a grown man go buy drugs for him. Make a grown man clean up his baby oil and semen. You don't think he can make Cassie Ventura perform sex acts with a male sex worker on video? Really?
Of course, Nancy. And all that trashed furniture, broken furniture, baby oil slick, as you called it, all over the place. He did that to people, too. Okay, he trashed them as well. The executive assistant got on the stand and when the attorney cross-examined and said, well, why didn't you just get the hotel staff to clean up the room? He said because he was trying to protect Diddy's image. He knew that Diddy was menacing, threatening, intimidating, and that if he did not protect his boss, he would be in trouble too. That's why all of these guys are nodding at P. Diddy on the stand. They are terrified of him. So of course, Cassie Ventura is going to have sex with somebody at Sean Diddy's direction. She is
under his
control.
You know what, Dr. Bethany? You just said something that actually turned my stomach. And it's this. I put so many rape victims, sex trafficking victims, ag assault victims on the stand. And when they come into the courtroom, most of them don't even want to look at the perpetrator. They don't even want to look at them again. And the few that summon up the courage to look at the man that raped them, that sodomized them, they look almost meek and mild. I've seen them kind of acknowledge, not necessarily nod, but acknowledge the rapist. They meet eyes and they really don't know how to act. So I am not impressed at all by anyone that comes in the courtroom and nods at Diddy. That means nothing to me. Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. to Tom Smith joining me, former NYPD detective, 30 years, narcotics, robbery, gang. And that's what I'm interested in right now, Tom Smith. And he is the star of the GoldShieldShow.com. Tom, thank you for being with us. Right before I left the DA's office to go to Court TV, a case I was working on was going to be a death penalty case where two little infants, babies, still in their layettes, right, newborns, as I recall, they were baby girls, were with their mom in a two-story apartment, and it was a gang war, and the women in one gang had gotten into an argument with the women in the other gang, whatever, over some clothes. So the gang members show up, they make a Molotov, and as they throw it into the upstairs window where the two infants, newborns, are laying, they say, quote, "Let's fry them babies." Fry them, as in hot oil, fry them. And they set the place on fire, and the babies were burned alive. They did not die of smoke inhalation. Their short time on this earth ended when they were burned alive. I had created a specialty of arson investigations. And can I tell you, there's nothing worse than what happens to a burn victim. I mean, the deadly use of fire and a very uncontrollable device such as a Molotov. He needs to go under the jail if he ordered this thing. Explain, what is a Molotov and why is it so unpredictable?
Well, a Molotov cocktail is a bottle that's made with gasoline in it with a rag on it that's lit on fire and thrown. And the destructive part of it, like you described, Nancy, is once it shatters, those flames go everywhere. It is a broad area that is covered by this Molotov cocktail that can ignite anything in its path. And that's why they're so dangerous. And it doesn't surprise me with this that Sean would have had a part in this, because that's what criminal enterprise bosses do. They order their little minions to do what they want, and they do them. And why is it? Because of intimidation, because of a power need. That's what's going on here. And that's what this whole RICO case is about. Sean Combs running this organization and putting acts like this into motion to intimidate anyone involved with another group or his group to make sure they stay in line.
Wow. You read my mind. That's my next point of legal discussion. And that is how Kid Cudi, who, according to Lauren Conlon, I have no reason to doubt her, was very affable and likable, very even killed on the stand. That's good, because that makes the jury believe him and like him. If someone is irritating or just, you know, agonizing to listen to, the jury tunes out. But Cudi was a great witness for the state. But Detroit Slayton joining me, renowned criminal defense attorney, very wily, joining me out of LA at Slayton Lawyers. Troy Slayton, don't you just love it when your client, your defendant, your criminal defendant is also clairvoyant? Because you remember, of course, Scott Peterson said, this is going to be my first Christmas without my wife. She died. I'm a widower. And bam, 2 weeks later, she was dead. And he was a widower. And then let's see, O.J. Simpson, Orenthal James Simpson, that's a great example. He had a dream where he murdered Nicole Brown, a clairvoyant dream. And here it is again. Sean Combs says, 30 days before, I'm going to blow up Cudi's car, his Porsche. It's gone. And believe it or not, just a few short days later, Kid Cudi's car blows up by Molotov.
Well, Nancy, prosecutors didn't charge him with using a Molotov cocktail, using a destructive device. And the statute of limitations on that would have run out in like 2015, because this allegedly happened in 2010, 2011. All the statutes of limitation would have run out.
In the five-count indictment, prosecutors state, quote, Combs, quote, relied on employees, resources, influence of a multifaceted business empire he controlled, and attempted to engage in, among so many others, sex trafficking, forced labor, kidnapping, arson. Put him up.
So
arson.
Those are the
it is part of the indictment. So Jurassic erase. You want to start over? You want a little do-over? Because he is charged with that.
They're alleging that, and prosecutors way overcharge this case. And that's why his lawyers are confident that the government is going to lose in this case. Because for racketeering, RICO, which normally is charged against mob bosses, big criminal mobster organizations, they have to prove that all of these things were part of advancing the Diddy organization. So to make TV shows, he had to have arson. In order to produce records, he had to blow up a car or have freak-offs. I think what the problem here is, oh my gosh, news alert.
He's not charged with producing records. That's not what he's charged with.
Drug-fueled party?
Said, Nancy? He's not charged with that. The sky is falling. Actually, he is charged. I'm looking right at it. But I do respect something you just did. When you got busted, you immediately came up with a brand new argument. That takes a lot of skill, Slayton.
He's obsessed with size. I mean, the biggest
Tootsie Roll. The size of a Tootsie Roll. Think about that,
Tootsie Roll.
Itty bitty ditty. Itty bitty ditty, the Tootsie Roll. Sean Combs is Tootsie Roll. We are live at the courthouse bringing you the latest in the United States versus Sean Combs in a multi-count federal indictment. Joining me, an all-star panel, to Sydney Sumner. Very quickly, Sydney, Crime Stories investigative reporter. We are hearing the state laying a foundation. This is why Kid Cudi's testimony is so important. He's not just a pretty face. He's not just a talented musical artist. But he is laying a keystone for the state's sex trafficking and RICO criminal enterprise case. Now, we heard Cudi on the stand talking about the Molotov, right? Blowing up his car. There were other assistants that did Sean Combs' bidding. But what can you tell me about Sean Combs continuing to call Kid Cudi long after he and Ventura had broken up? Straight out to Lynn Shaw joining me, founder and director of Lynn's Warriors, a nonprofit dedicated to ending sex attacks and sex trafficking. Lynn, can you really visualize Sean Combs doing his own dirty work? You think he was over at the Quick Stop getting the gas and making the Molotov and throwing it? H-E-L-L-N-O, are you surprised? I mean, does a high-powered pimp do all the beatings of the women? Does he go buy the drugs to keep them high? No. He has minions do that.
Well, Nancy, I'm here in New York City, and for years, they've been known as Dirty Diddy disciples. I'm not kidding when I use Dirty Diddy. That's what on the street, that's what women would report back to me. Men as well. You know, and I also want to point out, I hope we hear about it over the course of this whole trial. There were lots of women involved that helped him as well. These guys never get their hands dirty. They're in control. I am hoping our focus at the Warriors is always victims, survivors. I hope, Nancy, I'm so afraid. I want these sex trafficking charges to stick. I hope they're laying out for this RICO case, for this engaging in prostitution across state law. I hope, because we have so many victims right now looking at this, reporting back to me what's going
on.
Right. They can't
you
watch it.
You mentioned something earlier, Lynn Shaw, about all of the minions that did Sean Combs' bidding. And when we first started investigating this case and covering it, I and many of you on the panel predicted that there would be co-defendants turned witnesses. And that is exactly what we're seeing right now. People that do Sean Combs' bidding. Why is it important? Because that is what a criminal enterprise is. Again, think about Tony Soprano. You saw The Sopranos, right? On HBO, it's streaming right now still. Soprano ran the organization, but there are all sorts of people working in for him and around him in his criminal enterprise. One would sell stolen items, TVs, VCRs. Another would be charged of pimping or running a strip bar. Another would launder money. They all were part of the criminal enterprise. Now, we see former assistant George Kaplan on the stand. Now, talk about an unindicted co-conspirator. That would be him. Listen.
Assistant George Kaplan says he was sent to pick up drugs for his famous boss. Kaplan says Sean Combs gave him cash and a phone number to call.
Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. So, Sean Combs could talk a grown man into going and buying his drugs for him? No wonder this went down in the courtroom. Listen.
Diddy's former assistant, George Kaplan, takes the stand. Kaplan tells the judge he is only here because of a subpoena and he plans to invoke his Fifth Amendment right. Judge Subramanian grants Kaplan immunity, but the deal does not cover perjury.
So in order to get his testimony, Kaplan is given immunity. What does that mean? It means he cannot be prosecuted for anything he testifies to on the stand, including going and buying ecstasy, MDMA, and God only knows what else. So he talks a grown man into buying drugs. Let's see a little snippet of all the drugs seized at Sean Combs' mansion. Now, we know that Frank Black was a name, a pseudonym, used to check Sean Combs in and out of hotel rooms. Also used to get fake prescriptions, which is illegal. You think that Sean Combs rolled up in his SUV to the CVS or the Duane Reade or the Walgreens and got his own stuff? No. There had to be a minion. Listen.
Former assistant George Kaplan testifies that on Combs or Chief of Staff Christina Corum's instructions, he traveled ahead of Combs to set up his lodging, often asked to book under the name Frank Black. Kaplan says the first time he was asked to set up Combs' accommodations, he was given a prepared bag to unpack. It contained clothes, a speaker, candles, liquor, baby oil, and Astroglide. On subsequent room stocks, Kaplan says he often purchased baby oil and Astroglide on his company credit card.
Okay, legal objection. Ew. Okay, Troy Slayton. Sean Combs convinced Kaplan to perform crimes for him, buying drugs, get illegal drugs such as MDMA. Also convinced him to get prescription drugs under a fake name. Where's Slayton? Also a crime. So now he is talking his minion into buying his Astroglide lubricant, his baby oil, his candles, his liquor, all of that, and importantly, critically, using the company credit card, Troy Slayton.
Well, buying Astroglide, although it may sound gross in this situation, not illegal. Buying drugs, yes, illegal, but that doesn't make a RICO case. The government still has to prove that the purchasing of the drugs was to advance the criminal enterprise, was to advance his business interest, his legitimate business interest.
You think Diddy took all those drugs himself? No, that was being dropped in the woman's drinks. I mean, you need to go back to law school, man, and take a refresher course on RICO. RICO is any act that advances a crime, and the crimes have to be laid out in the indictment, which they are. I've already read them to you. I'll read them again. Sex trafficking, forced labor, kidnapping, arson, bribery, obstruction.
Those are all terrible things, but that doesn't make RICO. You have to prove that all of those
things. What do you think Diddy was using all those drugs for? He'd be dead if he took them all. He was feeding them to these women in their drinks. What do you think the Astroglide and the baby oil's for? For a freak-off, according to these women, against their will. And bringing in male sex workers from another state. That is against the law. RICO.
Different. That would be that sex trafficking. So we're mixing up two different things there, Nancy. You know that those are separate
indictment.
Yes, but
you're the one that said Astroglide had nothing to do with it. It has everything to do with it, just like the baby oil.
Just because somebody is having a rock star is having a drug fueled party doesn't mean that they're guilty of RICO, of racketeering. That's what's used for mobsters that are trying to sell drugs and use those things to make money.
Cassie says Combs wanted her glistening at all times and had her reapply heated baby oil as often as every 5 minutes. And during one performance, even made her get into a kiddie pool of baby oil. Afterwards, staff members were charged with cleaning up, but with baby oil and bodily fluids all over the floors, walls, and door handles, Combs was frequently charged for damages to hotel rooms, negotiations handled by Combs' assistants.
Again, legal objection. Ew! All right, to Dr. Bethany Marshall, let's see that video of literally a Dixie dumpster going down the hallway of the hotel. Yes, we're going to need a lot of Clorox to clean this room. Dr. Bethany, how do you convince grown men and women to do your illegal bidding and clean up your bodily fluids, your sperm, your baby oil, your Astroglide, and they do it?
Your dildos. All of it. Nancy, probably what he did is he started out being super charming with them, pretending to be their friend, buying them gifts, pretending to advance their interests in some way. And once he gained their trust, he would send them out on some criminal act. Once they committed the criminal act, now they were stuck and could not get away.
Isn't it true, Sydney Sumner, that sworn testimony is that Sean Combs tried to bribe a security guy?
That's correct, Nancy. He tried to hand the security guard a stack of money as big as his hand to leave them alone and to just drop the whole situation and not get Cassie Ventura out of that Intercontinental hotel room.
So Tom Smith, former NYPD star of Gold Shields podcast, Tom Smith, I guess it's just a Diddy world and we all living in it because all these people are so afraid or have their careers at stake, they go along with it. It will be a cold day in H-E-double-L that I would go clean up somebody else's bodily fluids unless my children threw up. It's not going to happen. But all these people just went along to get along.
Yep, and it's influence, and it's his power that controlled them. What can he do for them in the future? How can he propel their jobs, their careers, anything like that. That all is involved in this power trip that he was on. And like you know, Nancy, once you get away with it a little bit, you keep pushing the envelope to the next level, to the next level. And that's where you get into this crime boss that he is of controlling people with intimidation, with acts of violence and so forth. And it's just all part of Sean Diddy Combs' persona and his personality of being this boss.
That's right. It's Diddy's world, and we're all just living in it. Not right now. Sean Combs in a federal courthouse being charged and being tried for a multi-count federal indictment. And what RICO means, which is the major prize for the state, is that Sean Combs headed up a criminal enterprise involving many, many crimes, including arson, blowing up Kid Cudi's car. That is why Cudi is so important to this case. And Sydney Sumner, in a nutshell, I'm wondering if we're going to see henchperson Christina Corum. She is accused, she denies it all, of recruiting women for freak-offs, standing witness to a gang rape, trying to place an IUD in a victim. What I'm saying is she denies it all, but just like these other assistants, so many people were doing his bidding because they were afraid.
Well, and we've heard from other employees, anonymous sources who have not been on the stand, that many of them believed Christina Corum was in love with Sean Combs and did a lot of the things she did because of that. Other employees say Christina Corum threw them under the bus, made things that may have not been their fault, look like their fault, so that she looked like the most capable person on his staff that he could always trust and always come to. George Kaplan even testified that he told Christina Corum about the physical abuse he saw between Combs and Cassie as his reason for quitting. And Corum was sad and disappointed that that was something that he witnessed, but she understood why he left, and that was the end of it. There was no conversation about, well, what did you see? Should we talk to the police? Should we do? No, her loyalty was to Combs, and she hoped that George Kaplan would have discretion about what he saw.
You hear that, Troy Slayton? It's the death knell. It's the death knell. Kid Cudi's testimony and the testimony of all these other assistants, the nail in the coffin, the death knell for Diddy.
It might be, Nancy, but the government is still going to have to weave together all these disparate dots and tie it together to show that this was an overarching grand conspiracy to further a criminal enterprise. And I think we're going to hear a lot from Diddy's attorneys when it comes time for his defense to put on their presentation.
Well, you're right, Slayton. I don't know what they've got up their sleeves, but you're absolutely right. The state better be ready. We remember an American hero, Deputy Sheriff Hunter Reedy, just 27, shot and killed in the line of duty, leaving behind beautiful young wife, Bettina, and their children, Brantley, Caden, and Katie. American hero, Deputy Sheriff Hunter Reedy. Nancy Grace signing off. Goodbye, friend.